Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radio Lab.
So welcome to this week's Business Matters. We've got a rather groovy title, which is The Internet and E-Commerce Fast Forward to 2025. A brilliant suggestion from one of our colleagues who's here with us today, Marcus Haag. And we're honoured, as always, to have Professor Colin Bradshaw with us, renowned industry expert and general know-it-all, I think, to kick off the discussion. But the key thing here is it's very much a discussion, and we want questions from everybody, if we can fit them in from everybody this afternoon, on the topic. And what's, you know, I think everyone's got a bit of an interest, either as an individual or as a student or as a business person, in how the future lies. Now, Colin, I know you've got a few thoughts you'd like to share with us initially in terms of the next 10 years, or what the pictures, I guess what we should try and do is what the picture might look like in 10 years' time, because at any point in time we've got things that have become established. If we talk about today, we've got things that have become established that's commonplace now, which weren't commonplace, say, 10 years ago. So smartphones is an obvious example. In e-commerce is far more developed now than it was 10 years ago, and so on. And then there are new innovations that are happening. So now, for example, Amazon and Google, for example, talking about delivery with drones and new concepts and very fast service in urban centres like the centre of London or whatever, fast delivery of food and that sort of thing. These are sort of new on the horizon here in 2015. So I guess when we fast forward to 2025, it'd be interesting to explore what we think will be established as commonplace in 10 years' time from now, and what will be maybe, you know, frontiers of science, the new innovations that corporations or whatever will be introducing.
Okay. So, I mean, the first thing is, obviously, it's a bit of a fool's errand to try and look 10 years into the future and be accurate with your predictions. But still, I'll have a go. I think what is definitely true, and you've just alluded to it there, Stephen, is that the speed and pace of changing technology and the availability of data is just getting faster and faster and faster. So you mentioned smartphones there. 30 years ago we were still in the age of the massive chunky car phone. Now we all carry more computing power in our pocket than put a man on the moon in the 1960s. But what that means is that the change in technology and the availability of data changed also with consumer behavior. Means that a lot of things are now happening in e-commerce. So the first trend that is established now and will continue is that of the informed consumer. So consumers now know much more, in fact, about any product or service than the retailer does. To such an extent that within the few swipes on a mobile phone, you can know as much about any product and its price point as the retailer who's trying to sell it to you, who might have 100 years of experience. So that's all out there. That's the first thing. The second thing is that what that means is that retail experience is going to have to change. So retail experience is going to have to become much more service orientated. And the dynamics I can see emerging, and we'll open this up for discussion in a second, is that online, everything will become about price specification, but offline in the retail world, where you're actually going into proper shops, it will actually be about a function of service expectation and experience to price. So people will pay for service, and in fact, to take that further, shops will no longer stock goods because there won't be any point.
So there'll be like showrooms.
Absolutely right. So shops areas will become curated exhibits of goods seen in a context, and actually what you'll start to see is goods being arranged much more like in a traditional shop window. That shop window will be the whole shop, and what you'll go in and then you'll either scan or touch or whatever else, and those goods are then delivered at some future point to your home. So there's a whole thing around the shopping experience changing. And then second, as you were alluding to then about drones, There's a whole thing around delivery experience. And interestingly, the technology exists today, the data exists today, you can build that shopping experience today. The bit that's still missing, I think, and needs to be developed, and will be the biggest barrier actually to shopping in 2025, actually is the delivery of goods on a non-attended basis.
Non-attended basis.
Yeah, so when someone's not in English. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think that, for me, that's the big issue. I think it's not so much about choice of product and all that stuff, although it's all significant, obviously, but this whole issue, this dilemma that retailers have, online and bricks and mortar retailers, of actually getting the product to you. Mm-hmm. So the classic thing is, to take your example of the showrooms. Now, if I want to go and buy furniture, if I want to go and buy some carpet for my house, I want to go and buy maybe some curtains, but certainly a lot of furniture for my house, I can't buy it and take it away with me. It won't fit in my car.
Yeah.
And more than that, it's not in stock in the retailer today. So if you went into a department store, or just to go into a carpet store, most carpet stores will not have anything in stock apart from small rugs. So if I wanted to carpet this area in this room we're in today, which is, let's say, it's 20 square metres or something, I've got to order it and wait maybe 6 weeks for it to be delivered. And it's been like that for, I don't know, how long? All the houses I've had to furnish since I was a child, it's been like that. And that, interestingly, hasn't really changed very much, which I find quite surprising that people in that sector haven't been able to change it. But what you're saying, Colin, is that trend will continue. And the dilemma for a lot of these retailers is that even if it is the delivery of the carpet, or if it's the delivery of a book, how do I ensure that it gets to the customer?
I guess there are two ways that at least at a small level organizations now try to get past those problems. I can't remember which food retailer it actually is. It may be Tesco, but they allow you to specify delivery slots until about 10 or 11 p.m. So that you can really make sure you are actually at home. And I think a current trend, not at large scale yet, but a current trend of having stuff delivered in pickup points, which are situated
click and collect
every mile or every two apart.
Yeah.
And I think that would become bigger.
So I think you're right, Marcus. I think that's actually three trends we'll see emerging over the next 10 years. So absolutely the extended window where delivery becomes a 24/7 phenomena. Mm-hmm. And actually it could be that you get things delivered at 10 o'clock at night or at midnight because you're not being, or even 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning. So I think the first change actually for the delivery organisations will be, how do you manage your logistics, more importantly your people, to the extent that now delivery, because delivery models historically have been built around a 9-to-5 Monday to Saturday type model, or Royal Mail also delivered on a Saturday. But I think interestingly we'll go back to where we were with the original penny post type thing, where actually delivery was 7 days a week but 24 hours a day. So that's the first thing that will happen. I think the second thing that happened is absolutely right, smart boxes will get more and more prevalent, particularly in places where you either have blocks of flats where you might have a smart locker bank underneath, but I've also seen new housing estates being developed with that entry technology built in, such that there's a panel built into the front wall. The delivery person comes along, puts in a four-digit code, it opens up, they put the goods in, it closes back up again, you pick it up at a later date. But I think there'll be a third dimension which is going to be quite interesting, which we haven't seen yet, but will start to emerge. So if we think about what's happening currently with people like Uber, so Uber is a shared economy model, which is the world's largest taxi firm but owns no cars. But what it is people will, I'll use more my car and take it. Same thing with Airbnb, the shared economy models. I think what we'll see is the rise of the personal receiver. So actually you will hire someone to be at home for you that's trusted, that's accredited, that's validated, that will actually be in your home during that delivery window, when the gas fitter, you know, has to call round, or your delivery of furniture comes around. We haven't seen it yet. Like, I could see that being the next thing. I don't think it's going to be about drones, interestingly. I think drones are a nice, interesting headline. If you've ever flown a drone, you know just how damn difficult they are to get to the right place. But of course, just because you have something delivered by drone still doesn't get over the fact that nobody's in to receive the goods.
Exactly, because on the fulfillment thing, you've got two issues. It's the most expensive part of the transaction for the retailer is actually doing that final bit of delivery, and drones is all about trying to reduce the cost of it, mm-hmm. rather than making it any more convenient for the customer.
Yeah,
it's a cost driven thing. But your point about people there to receive the goods and the digital sort of post boxes, if you like, is a different angle, because I guess again that's more about making it easier for the retailer.
But also for the consumer. So, I mean, there's been lots of home shopping solutions that have looked at using local pubs, using local garages, using the local post office, etc. And they have had some limited success. And to be honest with you, I quite like having stuff delivered to the local pub, because it gives me an excuse to go to the pub. You know, so I see nothing wrong with that. But I think most consumers will want things on their doorstep when they get home. They don't have to go out again or make a detour on their journey to go to a garage, or, you know, even the local post office is not open 24/7. You know, so that's part of the solution. But I do think the integrated architectural solutions, i.e. smart boxes, will definitely be a way forward. You know, I'll be interested to see when we start to see the widespread use of you know, personal receivers as opposed to personal shoppers coming through. And we're already starting to see it now when there are, particularly in America, there are models like Rabbit, etc., where you can farm out odd jobs to people. And they'll go off on a job for you. Well, that's exactly what this is, but actually you're allowing them access to your home. So actually the validation and the authentication of those people that you trust to be in your home to wait for those goods. Well, exactly, like dog walkers or like babysitters. You know, it's that same sort of level of accreditation.
You're Luton.
Your music.
Radio Lab, 97.1 FM.
Okay. You could argue that trend that you talked about there is more for the more affluent customer, because you're going to have to pay for this receiver or whatever. Clearly, the vast majority of people won't want to pay any extra for whatever it is that they're buying. And my question for you guys is there a case for the vast, you know, the 80% plus of the population who maybe either can't or don't want to pay anything more than the absolute minimum for their products that they're buying, that they will be happy, in inverted commas, to go to the click and collect location, whether it's the pub, the post office down the road, the village shop if you're in a rural location, the, I don't know, whatever, a convenience store if you're in an urban location. And I wonder whether that trend is going to kick off more, that you're going to have more of these sort of pickup locations where, apart from the things like furniture, which you literally can't pick up single-handed, customers are going to be prepared to do their bit in the same way as they used to be prepared to do their bit by going to the shop, making that awful trip all the way to the shop, going all the way around the shop, picking up the things that they wanted to buy, taking them to the checkout, packing them into bags, taking those bags out, putting them into the car which they've parked, and driving back home again.
Yeah.
So the customers were doing, and still are to a large extent, a lot of the fulfillment work themselves. Question mark. It's nice and easy to say, yes, please deliver it to me if I happen to be there, because that saved me a job. But if I've got to pay for it, and nobody's, you know, it keeps bouncing between pay £5 for delivery or pay £5 or £7 for a to choose a specific delivery slot or whatever, and others offering free delivery. If I'm not prepared to pay for the free delivery, what can I do? I'm going to have to go and collect it, aren't I?
Well, I think if you're not prepared to pay, I think one approach that organisations can do is to make the product or to change and modify the product so that it more closely matches the precise needs and requirements of an individual. And most individuals would be willing to pay a premium for something that matches their needs 98%, 99%.
So could you give an example?
A good example is Nike ID on the internet, which I was talking about a couple of weeks ago in my unit. And you can choose the type of shoe, and then you can modify, specify yep. exactly how the shoe looks like. Yep. So the laces and the various parts of the shoe can be changed, and you can have all kinds of funny design elements, so that there, in the end, probably will be a couple of tens of thousands of possible combinations.
Yep.
And you can
so it's a personalized product.
It's a very personalized product, a mass customized product. Yep. And I think that would be something that would entice an individual to say, okay, well, that shoe is sort of what I want, but if I go to that company, even if I pay a 5-10% premium, this is exactly my shoe. And I think that convinces a lot of people to pay a premium.
So
I think to your point there, Marcus, what we're talking about there is the rise of personalization, mass personalization, mm-hmm. but also the rise of craftsmanship. So I'll come back to that in a second. I just want to go back to Stephen's question around will I pay for it to be delivered? And I think where consumers are getting to, and again, we're not fully there yet, but we certainly will be in 10 years' time, is to understand the total cost economics of going out and buying something. Because you described a journey there where someone, you know, gets in their car, drives to a shopping centre, wanders around for hours on end, buys something, and then brings it back again. But of course, you've got the cost of, you've got to have a car in the first place. Mm-hmm. You've got to put the fuel in the thing. You've got to pay for the parking. You've got to put your hours of time in whilst you're doing that. And again, most people don't factor that into their total equation. So that's one dimension. The other dimension is that retailers themselves, or people selling stuff online themselves, you also said before that actually the delivery is the most expensive part of the total value chain, which is absolutely true. But if they could be certain that they could make an absolutely on-time, guaranteed delivery, you could build that back into the pricing of the product. So if you had the smart boxes, if you had the personal receiver, whatever it might be, but if you as the consumer could guarantee, you know, that first time delivery would be accurate and would be fulfilled, you could then build that back into pricing. Because most retailers, A, build in the cost of having massive retail stores, build in the cost of inventory they've got to maintain all those different retail stores, but secondly, will build in some sort of margin to cover the cost of return goods and mm-hmm. failed delivery. If you can take all that out, you can pass that cost saving back to the customer, which makes the economics then more compelling. So there's all those dimensions to come yep. as well. And then to what Marcus was just saying, absolutely, the other trend I think that will rise is that if a lot more purchases become digitally intermediated, i.e. we do it online, actually it does become a function of price and specification. And what will happen is that people will be buying the same thing but for the lowest price. That's kind of where it will lead you, because you've got perfect market knowledge, gives you perfect competition, drives prices down to a certain point. I think therefore what smart retailers would do, so a bit like the Nike ID, is we'll look to customise goods. So Nike ID, the Citroen DS3, the Mini, you know, there's lots of products now where you can do that customisation. But I think even further along that spectrum, you will also see the rise in bespoke craftsmanship. So actually online manufacturing, because you can put this flexibility into manufacturing models now, actually will become about, I want something which is unique. Nobody else is going to have this, and I will pay a premium for that. However it's delivered, but I will pay a premium for that. And I think we'll see a rise in that as well. So people will have that jacket, and it's so put together that actually no one else in the world has it, and people will pay for that, definitely.
Can I pick up on that point and also link it to travel and tourism? Because sure. I have a sort of a related example. So I think in terms of what travel agencies do, they have quite changed in what services they offer. So when I first flew into London from Germany, it was 1997, and my friend and I literally walked into a travel agency to book a flight. Unless you're now 70 of age or above, and maybe not even then, you wouldn't walk into a travel agency just to buy a flight. You would do that online. So travel agencies where you literally walk into, and that's about that bespoke idea that Colin was talking about, they are offering a service around it, and a service that is not, that cannot really be built at a high quality by you interacting with the internet. So I think it comes down to, well, services or the experience is still being offline, and also the experience of going to shops is still something that many people enjoy, but then they do window shopping, they do browsing, but the actual purchase is being done on the computer and not online. So I think last weekend we had the Black Friday and the Cyber Monday, where the National News suggested that it wasn't particularly busy in the stores, but there was a huge rise in the amount of traffic that the internet websites experienced. So people might have gone to inform themselves in the shop about the product and the characteristics and touch it, etc. But then the actual purchase was done online, where they were certain to get that product at the cheapest possible price.
And also, I think it suffered from the bad experiences people had of the year before, in a lot of places there were sort of almost like riots in certain places.
And some of the fashion brands are now actually starting to do that. So if you go into a Gucci or a Louis Vuitton shop, particularly in places like New York, you try something on, but actually have smart mirrors, which will capture an image and send it to your phone, so you can put it out on your social media, and you can then send it off to your friends and say, should I buy this or not? Mm-hmm. But of course, what Louis Vuitton are then doing is, yes, they're using technology to enable a purchase, but also they're then capturing that information about, well, I use social media, and these are all my friends on social media as well, and we're talking about dresses. So actually, you know, well, you may not be talking about dresses, Marcus, but you know these people are interested in fashion. So actually, those fashion brands are making very smart use of technology, but they're also building a set of customer preferences and contact databases to go alongside that as well. So that is starting to happen. I think to your point then about customizing experiences, you know, actually the shop that changes when you walk into it will be the ultimate goal. You know, so actually, through the use of immersive technologies and 3D screens, etc. But you could envisage that when you walk into the shop, and either through your implant or through your Apple Watch or through your smartphone, it then pings to the beacons in there and says, you know, Marcus Haag has now entered the shop, and it brings up all the Nike ID stuff. And you say, you bought these last week, but you know, what about these to come with it this week, etc. It's a bit Minority Report, but all of that is doable today. It's just that no one as yet has fully done that based on an individual's preferences and data record, but it will happen.
Radio Lab 97.1 FM.
Most of what we've talked about up until now, to me, sounds like higher end product and higher end consumer, people who are willing or happy to pay for personalisation of trainers or whatever, or going, as you do, Colin, most weeks to Gucci.
Every week, for
fitting out in your new suits. But what about the real mass retailing, the real grocery, food retailing, stuff that is bought day in, day out, week in, week out, or indeed more routine clothing and that sort of thing, the mass volume products and the mass volume customers. How do you think things are going to change in the next 10 years for the everyday person, let's put it that way, in everyday retailing?
So the mobile experience has to grow in its integrity and its authenticity. So everything will happen through the mobile, because we all have them, we all use them, we all sleep with them, we're all with them 24/7. But actually, what retailers will have to do is to find ways of making that shopping experience easier. So I don't want to have to go to Tesco's or Sainsbury's. What I want to do is, when I'm on the train or whatever, is pull up my smartphone app, I get on the train, let's say, at King's Cross, I punch in the things that I want to have, and Sainsbury's are there waiting when I get to Luton station with my shopping. Now that's what I want to happen, or better still, it's waiting at my home when I get there, so I don't have to worry about where it's going to go. And again, there are in Tokyo, for example, there is a big illuminated wall where Tesco have recreated the shop, and you just tap on the products with your phone, and it builds the order for you. So again, it exists, but that ability to conduct that standard kind of shop anytime, any place, anywhere, but then have it delivered probably within an hour to where you want it. So most people don't decide what they're going to eat that evening until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Which is why you see a lot of the rise in these convenience stores and you know, curated experiences around, why don't you try, you know, the chicken and ham pie tonight? Because most shopping decisions are made about 3 o'clock in the afternoon for what you're going to eat. You know, so what I'll be able to do is just to either be on the train or whatever else and say, yeah, I want to try that with that bottle of wine, with, you know, that dessert or whatever else it is. And, you know, when I've walked back home tonight to my home, I actually want it waiting there on my doorstep. So I think what you'll see is higher frequencies of delivery of smaller value goods, particularly in food. So things like the Amazon Fresh model. You know, so Amazon are already experimenting within the hour delivery. They're already starting to do that. But actually, you'll do that with goods, and either have it timed to coincide with the instant you arrive at your home, or within half an hour of you getting there.
Okay, I'm sorry to persist on this point there, but isn't that still sounds to me like a premium product?
No, it doesn't have to be.
Am I not paying extra for it to be delivered to me within an hour?
No, the expectation will be that is the norm. So the challenge for retailers is to be able to do that economically.
So the typical shopper who might be in Lidl or Aldi this evening, you're proposing that that person in 10 years' time would be looking... and the provision would be made for online selection and delivery within an hour. Not everywhere, obviously, but yeah. I mean, in towns, let's say.
So your challenge is right. We need to be a little bit careful, because Lidl and Aldi, as limited range discounters, offer a very specific niche.
Amazon Fresh is a very limited range.
Absolutely.
Small range.
But Amazon Fresh, I think, will be much more about... Well, it has to be about home delivery, because there are no shops. Yeah. But it's that decision making moment, and then having delivery within an hour of that decision having been made. That's what will be key. So, you know, not only do I want to be able to buy at a good price and have the full range of choices from the internet, but I want it in my hands, in my home, in an hour.
Mm. Which will mean, like you were suggesting, I'll only be doing quite a small transaction, because
exactly.
I'll just be buying this evening
for the day. Yeah.
I'll be spending £10. I won't be spending £100.
Mm. But the point is, though, is that you'll be doing it every single day.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, we all know what it's like once you get online or you get on your mobile phone. Say, oh yeah, I'll also have some after eights, and I'll also have you know, a couple of extra desserts, and I need milk, and I need whatever else. Or when someone's delivering to my house. So actually, you know, the average order value and the kind of stuff that you buy, particularly if the retailer is smart and curates the experience so that it becomes, you know, yes, I want to have sausages tonight. Yeah, well, here's a red wine to go with sausages. You know, here's the dessert that goes with that. Here's the movie you can rent to go with. You know, the things you're buying. You know, so as long as there's an integrated experience goes around the back of it, actually, there's no reason why the retailer can't increase their share of basket.
And obviously, Amazon is the company in the world that does that best. So a couple of days ago, I was showing my students a cartoon which shows a woman in a store in front of a shelf, and it has some bananas and some other fruits on there. And next to the bananas, it said, whoever bought this item also bought, and then there was an arrow pointing down, and that could really also push sales as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe in addition to what Colin suggested, lots of purchases very frequently, but at a small value level. Also, you could think of, well, some goods, some products you just know you need again. So if you're always buying Coke and you have Coke in the house, and then if the smart fridge knows that you're down to two bottles of Coke, then automatically why not order another five to be delivered? So I think that there may be some
but I think where we'll get to is we're basing our assumptions on the shopping habits of today's consumer, mm-hmm. which is that we jump in the car, we drive to the big supermarket, and we shop up for a week or 2 weeks at a time. Once you change the mindset and come back into having delivery every day, you know, actually, you may not buy five bottles of Coke. You might only need one, because that's for tomorrow. Then I'll buy another one tomorrow. Then I'll have another one after that. Another one. So actually, I think our decision-making style and our consumption patterns will change, and we will literally have deliveries every day. The challenge for retailers is, how do you meet that challenge and make it cost economical? And actually, you know, if you're delivering to every house every single day, actually, that's a very different proposition to I'm zipping around all over the place and doing all these different things.
Sort of brings up a new case for the Royal Mail, doesn't it?
Well,
there are already other organisations doing those deliveries potentially every day already got the infrastructure.
This is Radio Lab.
Your Luton, your music.
But okay, so and I was just going to pick up your point about, you know, doing 2 week shop or whatever. Clearly, that trend, we can see that trend changing already. We've seen all the big food retailers, Tesco, etc., almost stopping any development of large superstores,
even cutting down,
going to smaller format stores, selling off space in some of their larger stores for other retailers to sublet and that sort of thing. So clearly, there's a trend happening there, and also there's clearly. Then move on to demographics. We all know we have an ever-aging population, and I should have done, but I haven't looked at what the statistics say for 2025 as to how what proportion of the population.
We'll be older, Steve. We'll be older.
But I think pretty much all of us will be older. That's definitely true. So we've got that whole scenario of change demographics in the UK and I guess most Western European countries. We've got here in the UK, we know we've got a much heavier, will be much more populated country in 10 years' time compared to today. And there's an increasing trend of one person households as well, single person households. Now, how do you think that all plays out? The older population, the potentially less mobile population, single-person households, and more dense population.
It's an interesting phenomenon that I certainly remember when I was at school, and we talked about, you know, the talk was of a golden future where, you know, machines would take over and robots would do all the work, and, you know, we'd have twice the leisure time, etc. Well, it just hasn't worked out that way, has it? You know, we now seem to be working more hours than, you know, our parents' generation.
The paperless office hasn't quite happened either. Well, on the contrary,
there's a lot of we need to be quite careful of some of those trends, but I do think the rise of the single unit household and the aging population, but people will still be as busy, and actually because of technology and because of the fact we're getting into these habits now, actually that won't make a difference. You know, we'll still be going into those kind of consumption models that we're talking about. I think interestingly the threshold for me that we haven't quite reached yet is actually, given the amount of technology, given the amount of data that's out there, retailers still aren't smart enough with their use of data. So Marcus mentioned before about the cartoon of the woman in the shop buying bananas, and people who bought bananas also bought apples with the arrow pointing down. Well, you know, that's really quite clunky. You know, that's not brilliant data analytics and recommendation making. Now, that's really very, very basic. But if you consider the information that companies like Facebook, Google, and let's say Apple now, and particularly with the Apple Watch and Apple Pay, you know, Apple are going to be positioned fairly soon to understand if you're using an Apple device to make your purchases on, you know, what site you're going to, potentially what it is you're buying, how it is you're paying, how fit you are, how often you exercise. You know, they're building up a very, very detailed picture potentially of what people are up to. And yet, still even quite sophisticated companies like Amazon still make things like, people who bought this also bought this, rather than, Marcus, the next book for you is... you know, they could do it, but they haven't yet. And I'm not sure whether it's because they don't want to appear creepy, you know, because they've done that piece of analysis and it's kind of like, well, how do you know I'm interested in Game of Thrones? You know, how did you work that out? You know, so I don't know if it's because of that, or if it's because they just haven't caught up yet with what the technology and the data layers they're now connecting will enable them to do. Because you think about most retailers, apart from, let's say, an Amazon, actually, even Amazon, they have massive legacy infrastructures now. And I think actually the biggest barrier to this will be, A, their governance procedures, you know, around business cases, but actually the legacy infrastructure they're kind of left with. It is interesting, those business models we talked about before, with Uber, Facebook, you know, Alibaba, Airbnb, but they're all business models which have really started up probably in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, and therefore they're not constrained by legacy infrastructure. But if you think about a Tesco, for example, you know, in the guts of the Tesco system around customer billing, there'll be some green screen technology going back to the late 1970s on some, you know, AS400 platform. And it probably is, you know, I'll have a tenner on that. It's on an AS400 platform, and it's a real bugger to move away from that because the whole thing's going to collapse.
Oh, just add in, I did
worked for Tesco for 13 years and left in 2000. And the guy who, I was in the finance area, and the guy who used to run all the finance systems, the IT man there, then moved on to helping set up Tesco.com. And I went over to visit him in in Welwyn Garden City, near here when they set up. So Tesco.com, which was being paraded as, you know, the frontiers of science and that sort of thing, where we were delivering products to the Hatfield and Welwyn Garden City area primarily at that time, worked like this. So you were online, a customer was online, had a very horrible looking screen with lists of products on, keyed in what they wanted, a loaf of bread and some bananas and some apples and all that sort of stuff. That order was received at this in this central office, and it's a great big computer there, and it was very big. It was about 6 foot tall and 6 foot long or something. And there was somebody sitting beside it in front of a screen typing with some bits of paper in front of her. I said, well, what's this lady doing? What's she doing? Ah, well, she's retyping those orders into the system that we need to generate the picking notes to go around and pick the products out of the store at the Hatfield store, so it could then be delivered. It was very, very low tech, and I think to pick up your point, Colin, it's about then having to make that massive investment, which they subsequently did, to take that to something that worked on a scale. And I think it's about picking up a new piece of technology, a bit of technology that probably none of us are even aware of now, might not even exist today, mm-hmm. that makes a massive leap beyond where we are. Because your stuff about the smart fridges and so on, when I was at Tesco in the 1990s, there were retail concept stores there with, you know, internet fridges and all of that sort of thing, and about being able to order online back in the 1990s. And as we all know, with the very, very, very few exceptions, they don't exist today, still. Whether they ever will do, I don't know. But it is interesting that you could look out a long way and some technologists somehow don't quite click with the consumer, or they can't quite make the leap to make them cost effective or something like that. And that's the interesting one.
Even on the contrary, you're also going back. So in the last couple of months, the sales of paper-based books has risen.
Yes.
And interestingly, exactly. E-book sales have plummeted, really, really gone down.
Yeah.
And sales of vinyl records have risen for the first time last year.
Yes.
They were almost
still
dead.
Still quite small, but yeah.
Well, yeah.
They have risen, yeah, you're right.
They're not... That's why I don't particularly like the word substitution, because nothing is ever truly substituted. Yes, there are changes in weightings, etc. But I think maybe at some point people are going back to the old ways to some degree. And I think this experience of shopping will also mean that shops will still exist. I mean, when I was a child in the big supermarket where I accompanied my parents to go shopping, it was a big warehouse, essentially. You picked the goods, you paid, and you left. And at the same place, it was rebuilt now, and it's more of an entertainment arcade. Yes, so there are restaurants, there are places to sit down,
yeah.
And shopping is just one small aspect out of many. Whereas in the 80s and 90s, you went there for shopping and nothing else.
Yeah.
But now it's that experience and that entertainment factor, which,
well, there's no doubt about it. You can either make shopping a very functional thing, it's a chore that has to be gone through, and some of us might feel that's the case anyway, or you can make it, you know, as people often say, retail therapy, make it a pleasant, enjoyable mm-hmm. morning out or afternoon out or day out and that sort of thing. And one of the byproducts of that is you go home with some products that you want, or perhaps you don't go home with the products that you want, but they're going to be delivered the next day or that evening.
And I think that's more going to be the model going forward for the high street. You're not going to go there to come home with something. You're going to go there to have a curated experience where you know, shops change around you, and you know, people bring things out for you to try, and etc. You then, you know, tap your Apple Watch or your implant or your smartphone to kind of make the purchase, and you might be able to drive to somewhere out of town and pick it up and then take it home that way, or it's delivered to your house later on that day from the central warehouse, you know, up in Birmingham or wherever. That's going to be much more the model. So I think that's what's going to happen there. But I think the other thing, just going back to the data and what Marcus was describing before, I do think there's a business model and a fortune for someone to be made who either writes the API or the XML code or the Unicode, whatever it is, which actually gives that universal translatability, such that when new technology comes in, it just seamlessly plugs in, and you don't get any of these legacy, latent systems issues that you do have today. If we could crack that one, that's where the money's to be made.
You're Luton.
Your music.
Radio Lab 97.1 FM.
Okay. Can I move on to a... Yes.
Because we just reading. At 2 we have an assignment there. I appreciate the discussion. And looking at the possibility of improving the utilization of the scarce resources we have, especially on the manufacturing side, personalization, actually, I think it will have advantage that we will improve efficiency in utilizing most of the resources and reducing the wastage. For example, when you talk about a carpet that if you can customize, then you know the size of your room. You don't have to buy very big piece, or the manufacturer will just manufacture something just to fit your requirements. So the wastage of most of our resources today that we find, they go to the garbage, I think it will be reduced from products, improving even the services. When they design a service, sometimes they just make it product that this is what they will need. Somebody will not need that one. So if you customize it, personalize it, then the person will specify what kind of service is interested in. If there's a tourist coming to Luton, they will be given that package. And then the cost, I hope, it will go down. You won't pay for something you are not going to utilize. I think that area will be one of the advantages. You talked of the cost of delivery, and people have to move around and go and get the product. The smart box you are talking about, today we have the safe key in some of the houses. So if you are going to that house, the person is not there, you have the safe key number, you just open, enter the house, do what you are supposed to do, provided he knows you and you are given the... So the smart box might work as well.
I can see another way of using the smart box, whereby you're coming to deliver to my house, my smart box, you text me on my phone, and I key in a number, which unlocks that box for 15 minutes or something, in order for you to put the thing that way.
Will reduce people moving around. Even the fuel we use on roads, I think, will go down if this is happening.
Yeah.
The challenge is, who are the target of the people who can afford that? That's another challenge.
I think it's the interesting
technology
one.
Technology will have to come with a solution as well. I think the other aspect is, in developed countries, don't have problem with the power, but in developing countries, the major aspect is power.
Yeah.
That whatever digital system you're using, you need reliable power in place.
Yes.
Whether your smartphone and the system. If this has to happen globally, the issue of harnessing the natural power source like solar energy, that the gadget we are using, if they can be using the solar power, I can charge my phone, I can have some of the connectivity using the solar power, which is likely to be available. I think that area as well will complement with e-commerce if we have reliable source of power across the globe. So that's an area which I think it has to be linked, or there should be some collaboration. As well, I appreciate that there is a lot of things which are going around. People have to learn, and we have to prepare people, especially from young generation. People have to be used, as Marcus was telling us, that the experience he used to have with his parents when they go shopping, it's really coming to his mind when he's doing something.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a kind of training that our information should flow right from kindergarten, primary.
Well, that's what I want to ask a younger member of the audience here today. And I can see there's a young chap called Richard at the back there, who's much younger than the rest of us, apart from Joe, of course, who can contribute in a second. What are your thoughts? We're going to wind up in a minute, but just... You must have some thoughts, not tainted by the past like we are.
I was a little bit curious about personalization, because having tailor-made products for you would mean, especially on the non-perishable products, that you want them to be durable as possible. So you want them to be cheap, you want them to last for a long period of time, and you want them to be for you. How would that affect the market? Because I imagine that people would buy one object, keep it for most of their life, and not buy something else, and would that would mean reduce the demand?
Yeah, I don't know. I understand the point you're making. So if you got something special, maybe that wasn't cheap, that maybe was expensive and valuable. So, for example, a wristwatch. Looking for my wristwatch, just come on. So a wristwatch that's maybe been personalised. To me, it's got my name on it, or whatever it is I've designed it. I would keep that for a long time. But if I had a personalised pair of trainers, depending on how much money I've got, of course, it may be, you know, assuming I'm going to wear them and use them, they're going to look, you know, after a year or two, they're not going to look very good, and I will be throwing them away and replacing them again and making my own choice. I'm Colin Newton.
Well, I think I was going to say, is it the whole point about that real individual customization and the rise of craftsmanship is that something people will pay for. So that won't be a cheap product, that will be expensive. But depending on what it is, what you're actually after there is something which you can then upgrade. So the smart retailers will be looking to bring something out where you're then locked into a system. So interestingly, it doesn't quite work, but if you think about iTunes, for example, there's always a new version of iTunes, but iTunes only works with iTunes. So if you get locked into that system, you can't then go off and use a Sony system or a, you know, any sort of other MP3 type system. So you're into the you're then in the iTunes family, and you stay in the iTunes family. So the crafted goods, where it will work very well is where you get locked into a maintenance or upgrade type thing. So on cars, you can certainly see it around servicing and upgrade. Probably less like to see that maybe on watches, but you know, if it's a very high-end watch, you know, they need new batteries, they need servicing, you might change the face from time to time or something, you know, but it becomes more of a modular type thing, so you can change it. But that's what Victory will
look like. Interestingly enough, slightly anal about watches, and the trend at the moment is that you buy increasingly now, you buy a watch and you end up with two or three different watch straps, which you can very easily change. Normally changing a watch strap on a watch is an absolute nightmare to do, and you usually have to go into a jeweler's or whatever to do that for you. But now the trend is to have, you know, for a gentleman's watch, a leather strap, a metal bracelet, and maybe an alternative, a different coloured leather strap within the sort of presentation box. But whether that's just a simply, you know, the watchmakers trying to tweak their product a little bit or not, but it is definitely going down the personalisation route. Were there other points or thoughts that you had that you wanted to share?
Well, the internet has been a major issue with tour operators and travel agencies, and they have done major shifts. Many have gone bankrupt over it. And now the major shift is on e-commerce, especially in tourism. The informed customer is the future, and it is now, and it will be especially thinking about India. India's trend in 2014 was with e-tickets in rail. Mm-hmm. About 40% of the population, I believe, has purchased a ticket via the internet over the year.
Really?
Yes.
That's incredible. What percentage of the population do you know has access to the internet in India?
I'm not certain.
In their homes, presumably a lot less, but I guess they can go to internet cafes or something too.
Yes. Because they would rather use the internet than stay in queue at the station and wait for hours on end to book a ticket. Train.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting how that's a global thing.
Especially since the rail system in India has been really developing, and with such a growing population that needs to move a little bit, getting more and more mobile, something like this is essential.
Yeah, developing economy, absolutely. All right, I think I'm going to call it a halt there. We've gone over time, I think. So I'd like to thank everyone for contributing today. Thank you, Colin, for your Marcus, brilliant suggestion. Thanks for your contribution.
Thank you.
See you next week. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Well, thank you.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.